Yeah, Warhammer 40K basically ripped Dune off hardcore.
Yeah.
But we are like way over time, so.
Yeah, this is a long one, but this was fun.
I'm this glad is the long, hard Dune one. Guess what? The Dune episode's extra
the
long.
The long, hard Dune episode! I like it.
Hi. Welcome to Kwisatz Haderach, everybody.
I assume that has something to do with Dune.
Fear is the mind killer.
This is Kyle.
This is Joe.
And I am the Muad'Dib.
Yeah.
Which they never actually said in that movie, I think.
They didn't. No, they didn't, actually.
Maybe it's going to be in one of the subsequent 12 movies.
So, in case it's not clear, this is the Dune cast. Spoilers are going to happen.
I prefer the Dune-isode.
Oh, the Dune-isode. I like that.
I like the Epidune.
Whatever it is, let's Dune it.
You got to walk without rhythm. Yes. You won't attract the worm.
So we've all seen Dune now.
We've all seen
Dune. Do we want to do like quick 2-minute thoughts on our takeaway and then we can dig into stuff? Or do we want to
just high level. So like Kevin, what did you think of the movie? Just rapid fire, no wrong answers.
Wait, also give your context. Like how much of the stuff you've seen. Yep.
Oh, yeah. So I haven't seen anything or read anything with Dune at all before this. So it's all new. And it was really awesome. The sound was incredible all throughout. And visually, like you guys were talking about before, it was very beautiful. And we ended up watching it again at home on HBO. Yeah. And it's definitely a movie that I will sit down and watch anytime someone wants to watch it. There was a couple bits and pieces I'd like some explanation on, or maybe I just need to go find the right thing to read. But we
can talk about those, definitely. That's high praise to say that you'll watch it any time, and you watched it again.
Yeah.
Because you barely watch anything, man.
It probably also helps that his wife is like very enamored by it, too. Like,
yeah,
it's easy for both
too.
Of them to watch together.
Yep.
We'll have to get her on here as a special... Actually, that would be fun, because Kate has lots of thoughts, too.
Hmm. The Dune Spouse-isode?
Dune Spouse-isode?
The Dune Spouse-isode. That sounds weird, but I'm on board.
All right, like Joe, what are your thoughts?
Okay, so I read the book, I've read it twice, but both of those were
years
during
ago
college.
In the future.
Yeah.
Is there more than one book? I thought there was, multiple.
There is. I've only ever read the first book.
Okay, which is presumably the three movies they're going to make, right?
Allegedly.
Got it. Okay.
We'll see.
And then I've also seen the 1960s version.
80.
Was it 80?
Close.
I will keep wanting to say. Yeah,
that's
seen,
okay.
David I've seen
Lynch
the one that
was
came
not
in the 80s.
Active in the 60s.
Yeah, that's true.
Wasn't there an older remake though, like Flash Gordon? There was like a one.
There was an episodic series they did
in the early 2000s, which I think we've all been sworn to secrecy, and we shall never speak of it again.
Yeah, no, it's not good from what I know. I haven't seen that one though.
I'll talk to that too a little bit.
Okay, I really actually quite enjoyed it. I thought like Kevin was saying, the sound was really cool. The voice. The use of the voice, I thought, was very, like, the very first usage of it. I think...
You crapped your pants?
I would have loved, because I've only seen it on HBO Max. I didn't get to see it in theaters. I would have loved to have experienced, as soon as that happened,
pants.
I was like, that would have made me poop my pants a little. And then the actual usage of it in the film, it feels like it kind of just does like a one and done. But then, like, it comes about in a really good way. The general storytelling is good. The pacing, I think, is really good. And fucking everybody is in this goddamn movie. They just got, like, everybody in it. It was kind of one of those, like, the movie ended, and it was like, fuck, this is a part one thing. I gotta wait, like, another fucking 3 years before another one. I don't know when the actual timeline is, but there were some things. Kendrick, I have some questions for you, but I will hold to those later. I will definitely try to watch it again. I want to try and get Laura to watch it. She's just not super interested, so...
She's just not that into it.
Yeah, I just want to kind of get her opinion on it, too, because I think she'd actually dig it. Also, sandworms, fucking terrifying.
They looked really cool.
Yeah. This is one of the best renditions of the Dune worms
ever.
Totally hands down. of just like the terror of it, of something that
they were
that
they
massive.
Were, they were there, yeah.
Ah, so good. Okay, Kyle, you, what's your opinion?
I have about the same amount of context as Kevin does. So, like, I've never read or seen anything before this point. I know the references, usually. Not Fear is the Mind Killer, but I knew about Spice and Let the Spice Flow and, like, that stuff. Spice I knew flow. The yes. Sandworm stuff. But that's pretty much it. Like, I had no context for any of the other stuff. And I think I enjoyed it. I'm thinking that they're basically making a play to become like a separate sci-fi Star Wars universe kind of thing. It feels like, you know, want a big space epic. The idea is that they can get a with the there's so many things I have to say with the lack like this. So there's places where you basically wouldn't know, I think, what was going on if you didn't know like much about it. But I feel like you can get away with that stuff a lot easier in a big space epic because it's not super important, right? Like, there are threads you don't need to follow in a normal movie because you don't really need to know the history of the Jedi to understand Star Wars. You just need to know that they existed and what they are, right? You don't need to know the history of the Bene Gesserit or whatever the ladies are. You just need to know what they are. Yep. Yeah, the Bene Gesserit. Like, that's, I think, a good position for them because if you would have tried to do it any different way, it would have been fucking confusing, like Spider-Man 3 levels of, like, just nonsense. And so I think that I don't necessarily agree the pacing was super good. There was times where I was like, can we move this forward a little bit faster? But I think most of the action sequences did a pretty good job of counterbalancing some of the slow parts. But keeping in mind that, like, my favorite form of horror is, or my favorite form of consumption is shorter in general. So I have to bear that when I give criticisms of stuff because, like, I have a shorter attention span than some people. Yeah, but I think it's pretty cool. I don't know that I'll, like, watch it a ton of extra times, but I thought it was pretty interesting. It kind of goes to your conversation we were going to have, Joe, but we didn't have time for. It was like, what kind of stuff do you have to read outside of this to understand it better or feel like you got what you were supposed to get?
Right, right.
But yeah, let's hear what Kendrick has to say.
We might actually have time for that because I think, so I already kind of made some of my thoughts known last time, right? We talked about it. And so I went in. I hadn't read the book as a kid, but my parents had. So I was kind of aware of it. Like, I may have started to read it, but given it up, and I don't remember. So I did the audiobook sometime in the last 18 months. I don't remember exactly when. And then Kate and I talked about it a lot, so that kind of, like, reinforced some of it. And we went into the movie very excited, but, like, ready for a letdown, because that's just the only way to live your life, right? And, and I was struck speechless throughout most all of it, and I just kind of my mouth was hanging open for some of the sequences. Some people complained about the audio being like, I don't know, too Hans Zimmery or something, because it was, but like, was it Hans Zimmer? Yeah, it was Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
Sorry, my brain fell out of my butt for a second there. And I felt like it was suitably epic in all of the ways that it needed to be. And being aware of the story, I was startled at how quickly they could run through all the stuff that happens, which is a very funny dichotomy when placed up against the people who are like, man, the pacing is so slow. And not to make fun of you, Kyle, I agree that the pacing is slow by a modern cinema standard, especially if you're used to short films.
Mm-hmm. I don't think the pacing was slow. I think pieces of it were slow. Definitely didn't feel like I watched a movie that the length of it was. But there were parts where I was like, I could care less about what's happening right now.
There were places they could have spud it up a little bit. And I felt like overall, as a fan of the book, or as a singular reader, I'm not a fan at this point, but as someone who consumed the book, it was almost a breakneck speed, except that the 84 version was a genuine breakneck speed. To answer a couple of things that came up, there are something like, and I didn't do research, this is me remembering, 8 or 9 or 12 books, it's in that range, most of which were written by Frank Herbert's son, who I think did a lot of drugs. because basically, spoiler alert, if this is important for people who haven't seen this, but Paul Atreides has kids, and I think grandkids, and one of them goes into the desert, somehow fucks his way into becoming attached to a whole bunch of sand trout, which are what become the sand worms, and by just doing an incredible amount of space cocaine, I mean spice, becomes God Emperor Leto Atreides IV, and he rules for 3,500 years because he can see into the future. So it, the series, I think, safe to say, the wheels fall off of. But
the wheels the fall off of book, the shark as it jumps.
Yeah. The book, the first book is, I think, the most popular, and then it kind of drops off pretty precipitously after that. But what we watched in the movie was actually the least exciting first half of the book, because it builds up to a whole bunch of shit, which culminates in the Fremen, led by Paul and briefly what's his name? I guess I won't say because it's kind of a spoiler if you hadn't read it and you hadn't seen the movie, but and to some extent Jessica, leading up a whole shitload of guerrilla tactics where they basically just fuck up the Harkonnen, and then a whole bunch of other shit happens. But like the really exciting fun shit all happens after this exact point of the book.
Right.
I didn't realize it was a part one when I went into it because I was too excited and I'm dumb. And I watched it. As I was getting that, I was like, oh no.
I only knew because Dennis had told me. Like, I thought going in before I had, was told that it wasn't a part one.
Well, then, when I started the movie, it was like, Dune. And then it was like, yay. And it's like, chapter one. It was like, fuck. But speaking of Harkonnen, Baron Harkonnen's hard to fucking look at, dude.
So good.
Oh my god. I did love how they designed him. Because like in the 80s version, because that was Sting, wasn't it? Sting was Baron Harkonnen? Or am I thinking
no.
Who the fuck was Baron Harkonnen?
He was the floaty gross dude who stabbed the guy after kind of raping him a little bit.
Yeah.
That wasn't Sting.
That wasn't
Sting. Just ran around wearing his underpants most of the time.
That's right.
I want to talk about the 84 version in a minute,
we'll get to that. I cannot fucking remember who played it. Anyway, in the 80s version, he like floats around. He's kind of a chunky dude, and he just looks really gross.
He's the Skarsgård. Stellan Skarsgård.
Stellan Skarsgård's Baron Harkonnen is this uncomfortably weighty, and incredibly menacing.
Gross.
He's just so, like, he's just, like, it's gross. Like, it's not that he's just, like, gross from being fat. It's just, like, you don't want him near you.
You just...
Because you, it's like, you're gonna, it's like, I don't want to touch or smell or look at you. Because everything about you is awful.
How did he die? That's what I want to know.
Lots of advanced future space medicine.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the shield, because he like pulls his shield up at the last second too. That helps.
Okay. So first off, when he didn't die from the thing that happened.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk in spoilers right now. We're pretty deep into this.
We're already spoiler free.
I just mean the whole
Dune.
Yeah.
The poison thing,
check out. Thanks for listening. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know exactly why he didn't die, and I can't remember what the reason was. But like. It was. I think what they did was a little bit extra. I think in the other one, he just runs out of the room or something.
Well, in the 84 version, the guy who played Atreides, he's all fucked up, and his vision clouds, and he breaks the tooth thing, and it's a gaseous burst from his mouth, and he grabs the wrong guy.
Okay.
He thinks it's Baron Harkonnen. He pulls him in close and breathes into him. It doesn't like wipe out the entire room. It just kills
that was
like
pretty
the
cool though.
I also enjoyed that.
And that was a nice choice. I liked putting Baron Harkonnen in a place of weakness and like simpering bullshit.
It also makes Leto look like more isn't it Leto Atreides' dad too?
Yeah, that's his
yes.
It makes him seem like he doesn't just go out without a bang. Like
he goes out like a badass, and his performance, that actor's performance.
Oscar Egg is badass.
That dude's playing Moon Knight in the new Moon Knight series.
It's no way!
I can't so wait good. For it. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So one of the things I want to talk about as well, as just a bit of
wait,
an aside
wait.
Here.
I have another thing. So I was kind of wondering, and this is just me maybe being a little dumb, but like, what was the whole, like, was it air power, sea power? Like, what was the whole thing he was getting at? Like,
sand power.
Yeah, so like, or desert power, whatever, but
yeah.
Was that just that they had, like, so did House Atreides invent those, like, dragonfly things that everybody uses, or
invent
the shields?
It was,
like, what's the...
His concept was to make allies with the Fremen, when the Harkonnen considered them enemies and just fought them everywhere.
So it really wasn't anything more than just, we became powerful because we made allies instead of made enemies.
Yes, and that's actually really what the whole House Atreides thing was about, was, like, we don't get powerful by crushing people, we get powerful by allying with people and empowering them.
I can definitely see how, like, a bajillion other sci-fi universes have pulled their source material from that.
Oh, dude,
that.
Yeah.
Because,
oh,
like, you look at things like look at Twilight Imperium as a board game, like, universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it's more alien, but it's exactly the same thing. There's, like the 12 races or whatever, and they all have different ways of becoming successful. It's kind of cool to see that in a universe. Like,
yeah,
sure.
A lot of the like clan, basically like the house family political intrigue, is straight battle tech. Like,
cool.
Just 100%.
Yeah.
Like,
I had some questions about that. That's what I was going to ask Kendrick, actually, or whoever wants to explain it. I was a little lost in the beginning. So I get that, you know, they're the house. They're kind of the good guys, right? They're trying to make allies with everyone. But who passed on the sand equipment? Because they mentioned, like,
the Harkonnens did, but
okay.
They didn't really
so,
do
so,
it. They just kind of, like, left them with shit.
Like, I was wondering why. Like, what happened? Did the Harkonnens just leave? And
So the part that they didn't do a great job, and this is actually the only real critique that I have of the story that they kind of omitted, which I kind of like and I don't like, is you never see the Emperor.
Yeah.
The Padishah Emperor. I think I said that right. I always fuck up the names. But the Emperor, who's basically not quite a Warhammer 40K emperor, but he's a space emperor of all mankind.
Okay.
He's part of another house. And it's not necessarily, like, a special house. It's just he's the house who's the emperor now. And Jessica is from that house? I always forget. Like, she's associated with it in some way.
Is that explained in the movie? Because I did not
know
that.
No, they didn't even address that.
No, they basically jettisoned the whole Emperor angle, and he's just a shadowy figure who does a couple things here and there.
Uh-huh.
But the whole point is that the Emperor is playing the Harkonnens against the Atreides to see who wins. And so he
because
sets
the Atreides
up the
is like are like their biggest or the Emperor's biggest worry right now, right?
Well, because technically Jessica's son could have a claim to the throne if the current Emperor died. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
the
Bene Gesserit are setting
though,
him up.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean it is, but it's not very well established.
Yeah, okay. So there's also two angles there, and that's something they touched on very briefly in like the intro sequence that they like just kind of narrated through was that the reasons the Harkonnens left at all, the entire reason they left Arrakis was straight up because the Emperor fucking said to.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Like he's just like, you guys get off,
gifted,
and I'm
okay.
Giving this
Arrakis
to the House Atreides.
Gotcha.
But he did it as a trap.
Now, here's
that
the thing.
That explains
though.
So much stuff that I meant. That gets me.
Yeah. The other reason was, and they had kind of talked about this while Dave Bautista was basically on screen the entire time. So sometimes, I don't know about you guys, but I found myself distracted.
Yeah. He's
but
he's
nice a fucking guy. Badass dude. Basically, their wealth that they accumulated from, like, that the Harkonnen family accumulated from the spice trade from Arrakis alone, put their wealth far past the Emperor's. So they've become an actual legitimate threat to his power if they decided to. They could afford to actually wage a war.
Right?
Like,
yeah, very much space Game of Thrones.
So that's why the Emperor is kind of in this thing of like, okay, here's what we do. I've got one challenge, like a potential heir challenger to the throne in case something happens to me. The Bene Gesserit have a chance of having their ultimate messiah coming about.
And Sadrak.
Yeah. And then I can never remember how to fucking say it.
That's
and
why
then,
I'm here.
Yep. And then the, you know, the House Harkonnen, which could literally wage a war that I cannot afford to be in.
Yeah.
Now I put the spider and put the scorpion in a jar and shake it up and let them fight.
Why did the emperor let him buy the troops from him then?
Ah, because, and this is the next bit, is he needed to show Harkonnen that they had him on a leash. Like, I control you, so you need to use my Sardaukar to win. The book goes into this in ridiculous detail, and I really appreciate that they didn't do that in the movie, and you're just like, okay, well, that's happening, because it's so really bad in the 84 one, the amount of exposition.
Yeah.
Because the next part is that Paul is possibly the Kwisatz Haderach, but only because Jessica fucked over the Bene Gesserits and refused to follow their rules
and have a daughter.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
But doesn't she pregnant with a daughter right now?
She is now, and that's another whole thing. But the trick is, Paul has an equivalent in the Harkonnens, and I don't think this character was in the movie. It's the character Sting was in the 84
one. Oh, shit, you're right.
And he is also possibly the Kwisatz Haderach, because the Bene Gesserit have been basically breeding humans for the last 4,000 years.
They said that in the movie. They said they're basically putting Bene Gesserit everywhere to have them like breed with other people.
And they didn't mention it, but I mean, like, they mentioned it, but they didn't mention it, is that there is another guy who is basically directly opposing Paul. And the Emperor recognizes that not only does he have a powerful family that could crush him with their economic wealth, a powerful family that could crush him with their claim to the throne, but the Bene Gesserit have been playing both of them against him.
Yeah.
And so there's this ridiculous amount of political intrigue that all comes in the book, and it just doesn't come in the movie.
I mean, I feel like you get that, like, sense from the movie, but it's not
clear-cut.
That, to me, is my favorite part of the movie, is because I'll sit here and geek out about this shit, but you don't have to, because you get these vibes and these senses from the movie, and that, to me, is the epitome of good filmmaking.
That's true.
Yes.
Where they're like, you don't need to know about the Kwisatz Haderach and how this and that and the other thing. You just get like, oh, this guy's important. Oh, those people are bad. Oh, these people are powerful.
It's that ultimate show, don't tell, right? Because when the Bene Gesserit mistress is talking to Jessica about the Kwisatz Haderach, it's these hushed tones, and it's like, you weren't supposed to do this. This has dire consequences. You don't have to know what the Kwisatz Haderach is. Well, you know that it's important, and that this fucks up a lot of people's plans, a lot of very important, dark, shadowy people's plans.
I'd be interested to see if they follow through with the Sting role or not, you know? Like,
They kind of have to. He's kind of important.
Okay.
I think that's probably going to be a big point. I would wager that's going to be a big wager.
I think. He would be Dave Bautista's character's brother, I should say. So.
Yeah.
So the first time I saw the chosen person who was basically chosen by the Emperor to deal with the transition, that lady, mm-hmm. I can't remember her name, mm-hmm. But when she was basically letting Paul and Jessica escape,
mm-hmm.
she was like summoning a sandworm, right? And they had mentioned that the Fremen live. There was tons of them, and they were all over, and they were super hard to find. I don't know if I was the only one that did this, but the movie made it kind of seem like they existed inside of the sandworms. Like, you want to let yourself get eaten, because that's the only way to get to the Sakets or whatever they're called. And I was like, because so many of them were, like, using these things to, like, manipulate the locations of the sandworms and things like that. And I figured, like, I was like, oh, that'd be so cool. And then it wasn't that, but I was like, oh man, that would have been so cool. Like, if like the reason that they can't find him is because they're constantly moving and like one of the greatest predators on the planet, like, but they've learned how like to live with them. Right. And I personally think that I Kyled myself on that, because the fact that one dude was riding the sandworm at the end was like stupid and cheesy. And I was like, that's it. Like, that's what it is. Like,
so the sieges, are hidden usually in grottos, but like, yeah, They do. There's a big thing about riding sandworms. That character was gender swapped, and I think it was the best choice they could have made, because they also made her like an actual like part Fremen, part not Fremen.
Yeah.
And the way that she died in that was much more epic. We're at time, but I want to say one thing that really upset me about the movie. My number one absolute biggest complaint.
You going to talk about Shields?
Shields.
I wanted to know.
Because I didn't have any problem with those.
The shields are supposed to block any object moving faster than blah. And it's this thing called the Holtzman effect, which is also how ships fly, and it's his MacGuffin. I think it's not Holtzman. That's going to be embarrassing later. But the whole point is, if you were to shoot a bullet at somebody, the shield would stop it because it's moving too fast. But then, so that you can like move around as a person, and the shield doesn't like kill you, normal movements are like protected, are allowed. And so the whole thing is there's this massive, weirdly, boringly obsessive concept of the slow blade, where you basically move around real fast and then slowly stab somebody. And they got way into that in that first scene when Spider-Man was fighting Thanos.
Yeah.
And then, like, they forgot about it for the rest of the movie because, well, I really love Jason Momoa's performance, even though he really needs a beard stat. Badass
fact.
He had one, and then they just took it.
Yeah, his badass fighting all the Sardaukar and then just killing them all was a great martial arts scene. I really liked it from fight choreography, but they never used the slow blade. He shouldn't have been able to kill any of them.
All right, so from a perspective of someone who had no idea that was happening, I had no issues with how they did shields or anything like
no,
that.
No, because it looked fantastic.
It looks fantastic,
really cool.
But no, you actually bring up a really good point.
It's like they forgot, I swear to God, they forgot about the slow blade. They picked up that shoot with Josh Brolin in training with Paul Atreides. I'm not naming the actor because it's just Paul Atreides. And then they added that like in a pickup shot. And then when they were CGing in all of the shields, they were like, oh, shit. So I guess make it
red
sometimes and
then
they'll die.
Then? Like,
right?
Well, I guess what I'm saying
is, it doesn't make sense.
Obviously, they're using some type of different thing here. Because I don't even remember their fight being a slow blade fight. I thought it was like flats or something. I don't know how I got that. But like, I thought Paul tested it against his shield and it was like some type of hit. That was what I was supposed to get. It was a slow movement.
He hit it hard.
Oh, okay.
He hit it fast.
Well, that was...
Gotcha. So, I have one thing to say. One thing to say. In answer to what Kyle was saying. The darts. I think the issue was when the dart has the impact, it hasn't stopped moving. It still has its like force moving, but it's slowly slowing down to a point where it actually could get through, but then the shield kind of also traps it
because
it's then like caught
the
in his movement.
Yeah, I kept wondering why they weren't using guns with all this. Like,
yeah, and I feel like
so
that's kind of a weird oversight too.
The darts had like a little propulsion thing in them. I think that's apart from the books where like it hits it and then it gets slowed down and then a little propulsion thing says, no, 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 slowly push.
Okay. Slowly. And like
if you watch
the
scene where the bombs
cool too, by the way.
Are... Yes, that's actually straight from the book. If you look at the part where the bombs hit the shield, and then they slowly, like,
I was wondering
through.
About that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that those are basically bunker busters, like shield-busting bombs.
So who created the shields in that universe? That was just, they're just invented and everybody has them.
The shields were built, like, 15,000 or 15,000 years ago, I think it was.
And they haven't
during the time
changed
period.
Shield technology since.
Well, no, because there was also, they had AI then, and then they had the Butlerian Uprise, which is where the AI tried to kill everybody. It's basically the Men of
Iron. It's basically the Men of Iron and Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, Warhammer 40K basically ripped Dune off hardcore.
Yeah.
But we are, like, way over time, so...
Yeah, this is a long one, but this was fun. I'm
this is the long, hard Dune one. Guess what? The Dune episode's extra
the
long.
The long, hard Dune episode! I like it.
All right, guys. We'll have to record another one. I'm sorry, Kyle, we went a little long.
Why are you sorry to me? Oh, because
we love you specifically.
Okay.
Yeah, these
like, comment,
these
and subscribe.
Movie ones always go long. That's fine.
Yeah.
My best to Dalton. Ask him to hit the less of the caps lock, please.
No. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.